This morning's scripture reading is from the book of John, chapter 17, verses 20 through 26. And Jesus prays for future believers. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one. Father, just as you are in me, and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one. I in them, and you in me. May we be brought to complete unity to let the world know that you have sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. Father, I want those you have given me to be with me where I am and to see my glory, the glory you have given me because you loved me before the creation of the world. Righteous Father, though the world does not know you, I know you, and they know that you have sent me. I have made you known to them and will continue to make you known in order that the love you have for me may be in them, and that I myself may be in them. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Talia he, taruashite. It is an honor to be here and a privilege to come back. And when I was coming through the door, so many of you came up and spoke to me and just embraced me, and I felt welcome. Today, we always speak the truth. I find it amazing that I'm here. Because for a long, long, long time, it was decided in this country to eliminate Native people. But you see, we have a loving God who created us and felt differently about that. So I want you to imagine right now what it would feel like as we sit in this church and we are praising and singing, and in a flash of an eye, the doors burst open and there stand the soldiers. And they tell you to get up, get ready, you are leaving. Now, you can only take what you can carry, and you are being forcibly removed. Now, I want to say to you with that, on the Kaurna boundary where my people came from, where they were placed by the hand of God, we had a small Methodist church. Yes. And when those doors burst open and we were told it was time to go, you are going to be removed from the Carolinas, from Tennessee, from Georgia, from Virginia, from Arkansas, and on down, that in our church, the thing that they began to put into their hands was the most sacred pieces of that church. And they carried it on that trail more than 800 miles in their hands because it was important. And they carried it to Oklahoma. And they rebuilt it. And they never lost faith. when I go there and I stand and I touch that wood, I remember how spiritual our people are from the very beginning. That happened in 1830 to 1838 under the orders of President Andrew Jackson. Our people saved his life, and he repaid us with the removal for gold. Can you imagine what it was like? And yet our hearts were still open and loved. It is still surprising because it didn't end there. In 1880, they forbidden us to do our ceremony of Sundance. It was outlawed. If you were caught doing it, you would go to prison or worse. In 1881, they put a new law in effect. And they said, you cannot practice Native American religion or any of your customs, or you go to prison or worse, including your children. And yet I stand here today. In 1924, they decided we could become citizens of the U.S. Wasn't that nice? Welcome to America. You get to be a citizen. You have no rights, but you get to be a citizen. It wasn't until 1978 when the law was passed that we can once again practice our beliefs and our customs. 1978, my friends. But how did they survive all those years? Because you see, our elders are so important to us because they took all of that, put it in their hearts and in the shadows when no one was to be watching. They practiced. And guess who was watching? The children. And they took it and put it into their hearts and they practiced. Because we had the faith that one day God would remove those shackles from us. Today, we have 562 federally recognized tribes. It's not counting state. In the small state of Delaware, you have two state recognized tribes. Doesn't count states. Doesn't count unrecognized. But we are here because the one and only Creator God created us to be who we were meant to be. Do you agree? The other day I was sitting in a church and the pastor said from the pulpit that God don't care about heritage and who you are. He only cares about this. When that is said, that said, you don't care about me or my children because God made me to be Native American every day, every moment, and to walk in a good way. It's hard because I want to get fired up. As you can tell, I'm a little hyper, right? Some of you go, I know, I've seen her before. So I'm going to stop with my history lesson. Is that okay? Are you getting ready to show me the door? Okay. So I want to talk to you about community. Because we survived because we were a community, weren't we? We were a people of community, so I want to talk about that. Last week, invited to speak to the federal agents of the environment. I didn't know it. I just showed up to speak, and then I found out I was talking to feds, and I went, oh. And the previous council member was with me, and he's big, so I thought I was kind of safe. Because he is pretty big, and I was like, okay. So for 3 days, we were speaking and teaching about the environment and how Native people see things and how we're connected. And the last day, I got in his SUV, and we were driving off, and he goes, Raggy, I just want to ask you one thing. What's that on your ankle? I said, oh, it's a Fitbit. He said, I think everybody thought you were on work release. Councilman, why did you wait till the last day when we were leaving to say that? He goes, I didn't want to upset you in case you were on work release. But I want to tell you about my community of Fitbit people. Is anybody in the community of Fitbit people? Thank you very much. You know, it's crazy. Isn't it? Are you moving those feet right now? Are you going? Are you getting it going? Okay, you're smarter than me. I have it on my ankle because I don't always move my arms. Or my arms are cheating. Well, anyway, so I'm working on this because it's very important that I do this to stay healthy so I can be here. But one day my phone, I got a text message. It's from Tanoa. And Tanoa said, Raggy, how you doing today? Are you okay? She thinking about? Does she know something I don't know? And I texted back. I said, yeah, I'm doing fine. She texted back. She said, well, we've noticed you haven't been moving or making any steps. I realized they're spying on me. And so what I did was, I thought it was funny. I texted her back. I said, I'm just fine. I'm sitting here with a gallon of ice cream. Breyers, Reese's, and I'm eating it by myself, and I'm not putting the spoon down till I'm done. My phone went off, and I didn't answer. About an hour later, there was banging on my door. I'm like, who's here? I opened the door. There's the whole community of Fitbit people. Tanoa's leading them. I'm like, what are you guys doing here? She's like, it's an intervention. Do what? And behind her was Sister Maria. She had a bag of those veggie sticks. They're nasty. I just want you to know. And on the other side was my good young one, Kaylee. She had some real vegetables and a bag of green M&Ms. Because we know that's a vegetable. But it was amazing how much they loved me, that they would show up for an intervention. And I thought they were kind of crazy, and I'm really worried. So one day, I had a lot of work to do, like on the computer and writing some stuff. Yeah, I do have to write some stuff. I don't like it. So I figured out if I took my Fitbit, wrapped it around my little Jack Russell and duct taped it, I'd just be throwing the ball. She'd be running, running, running. They wouldn't bother me. But the other day, I was putting on my jeans, and they were loose. I was like doing a little victory dance. Woo, woo, woo. I was so excited because they were loose. And I was getting ready to call him and let him know. And then I realized I had my son's jeans on. Community. We even have young ones in this community. They're always challenging because they're borderline diabetes. And so we all work together to keep each other healthy. It's because we're doing it together that it stays strong. Do you agree? Only when we are together can we be strong. It's hard when you're out there by yourself. So this past year, it was in November, You know how busy November is, because then it's December. And so it was so busy, and I had a phone call. Pastor Charlie, United Methodist pastor of Nome, Alaska. Anybody been to Nome? I didn't think so. Have you been to Nome? No. Well, let me tell you, Nome is a little tiny fishing village, and I want you all to say, amen, because there's a United Methodist Church there in that village. All right. So anyway, there's this little church there, and he's a pastor, and he calls. He said, Raggy, we want you to come to Nome, Alaska. I was like, yes. I said, well, when am I coming? He said, December. December? Why would anyone want to go to Alaska in December? It's dark. It's cold. It's December. Hawaii, I could see that. And he said this. We want you to come. We've raised the money, and we want you to bring joy. Because we have a schedule you're not going to believe. From the moment you wake up until you go to sleep, we have places and things for you to do. Because in Alaska, the suicide rate is so high. The depression is so high. And I said, what? I'll go. I was so excited. I was going. And so then they found out I had a layover, and it was like 18 hours. I said, I can sleep in the airport. Don't worry about it. They said, no, we're going to try to raise some money. And they did. And so that night I arrived at 1 a.m. in the morning, and I was at the airport, and the shuttle was coming to pick me up. I was the only one on the shuttle. And it was snowing. The man picks me up, takes me to this little hotel. He said, so what you going to do in Anchorage? I said, oh, no, I'm just sleeping here. Tomorrow I'm going to Nome. And he said, I'm here my entire life, and I'd never go to Nome. Right then and there, I had to decide, am I still going, or should I just stay in Anchorage? I went. He also said something else. He said, I hope you have warmer clothes than that, because you'll never make it in Nome. I thought, this is all I own. But I went. When I got off, he was not kidding. Those Arctic winds were going through me. When I went through that, anybody been to Salisbury Airport? That's a big airport compared to Nome. It was, I couldn't believe it. And I stepped outside. It was so cold. And when I came in the building, there they were. And they had a big pocket to wrap me in. And they took me back to the little parsonage of the church. And then they showed me my schedule for the next day. It began. Children's homes. Hospitals, nursing homes, shelters. One day I was to be at the prison. I'm used to going to prison. I worked there for a long time. The difference is they let me out, usually. And I walked into the prison as happy and excited to deliver messages and hours worth of stories and then do workshops with them. And I walked in and felt like I couldn't breathe. Because when I looked out as they brought them in, they were like babies. Young men, maybe a couple elders, but they were young. And they were Native. And I got up there and did the best I could with the grace of God. And then they had been preparing for me to come, so they had made me a knit hat that I wore every day for many months to pray for them. You see, life is hard for them because this is the prison that services the villages. And to get to the other villages, most of them you can't. So that means when they're serving out their time, nobody from their communities can get there because it's like a $2,000 ticket and they are alone. And that's another way to break a man's spirit because he can't see his mama or his children. And they need a lot of prayer. And throughout the entire time, Boys and Girls Club, y'all know about Boys and Girls Club? State of Delaware, there's a lot of rules, aren't there? In Nome, there's no rule. Just keep the kids safe. One person, I want to tell you, he had been a United Methodist little missionary. He decided to stay. 75 kids. One missionary who stayed. Aren't we amazing? I don't know how long the church will be there. It's hard. Every day I fell on my knees and thanked God to be there. I wasn't bringing a blessing. They were changing my life in children's homes, waiting and hoping one day they'd have a forever family. Homelessness. It was hard, but there was this one day where they wanted me to go cross country skiing. Can you see me cross country skiing? I can't believe they asked me, and the pastor, his wife wanted to take me. And he said to me, "Remember, the mountain looks a lot farther than it is. I went, "Huh?" He goes, "It looks close, honey, but it's far away." I'd never been on a set of skis, so I decided to stay with the pastor. He said I could rest. He was getting ready for something. So I was resting. I just put my feet up, and there was a knock at the door. And I thought, well, it's for the pastor. It's not for me. I am having a little break here. I was excited. It was an elder. If you know anything about our culture, we do everything elders say. He came in, talked to the pastor. They came into the room, and they said, "Raggy, we'd like to take you so you can experience ice fishing." First of all, you need to know I don't eat fish. I like fish swimming in the water in the aquarium. That's kind of cool. But I don't want to eat fish. But I can't say no, can I? So I would have to get ready. I had to borrow their son's wind pants. The boy is over 6 foot tall, 300 pounds. Tied them up around my neck and appreciated them every moment. Putting on the big old boots and the big parka and the big furry hat and the things. And I looked like the Michelin tire man everywhere I went walking. And so we didn't drive unless you were going outside the village, and we walked, and I'm walking with the elders, and I'm thinking this is weird because we're going ice fishing. They got this little box, so I'm walking, and it's snowing, and I'm saying, no whining. That was my song the whole time. Lord, don't let me open my mouth and whine. Walk. And so we get way far away from the pastor's parsonage, and it's so far away. And I look at him and I said, "Where are we?" He said, "We're standing in the middle of the ocean." Now, if you're from Delaware, you know don't go on the ocean when it's frozen, because it's not. I am now standing in the middle of the ocean. Well, not the middle, just far enough out there. My knees were knocking, but they couldn't get together because I was a tire man. And so they opened this little wooden box, and he pulled out this little old saw. I mean, it was old. It was made from bone. That's some strong bone. And he took it, put it down on the ice. They cleared it off, put it in the ice, and he tapped it. And then he started doing this, right? They start cutting. They're cutting. And I'm thinking, this is going to be a long time. They're cutting. And after a little while, they looked at me and they said, it's your turn. Do what? It's your turn. So I grabbed the hold and I tried and I tried and I tried. And they let me keep trying for a long time. And it did not move. They finally figured out they better get going, so they got it done. And then they pulled out fishing poles. They were this big. Not like what I saw people fishing with around here. They pulled them out. They're this big. They were made from bone. And then they opened up the bait, and it was squiggly worms. And then they would do it, put it down in the hoe, and they would wait patiently. When you're hyperactive, that's kind of hard. So they're efficient, and they take it. You have to go like this, go jerk, like that, because you got to make sure it's caught. Then pull it up. The fish were this big. This big. How many fish this big do you need to feed a family? You're catching. Then, of course, they look at me. It's your turn, Raggy. Ugh. Well, I'm an advocate for worms. I believe they have a right to life. And I don't want to touch them. They've seen it differently. And I put it down, and I'd wait, and I'd wait, and I'd wait, and I'd wait, and I would think I had one. Nothing. They let me do this for a long time until it's getting a little late. I thought it was late when we started. And they put it away, and we put the ice back, and we cleaned it, and we said the prayers, and we started walking back. And they were talking, and I was just moving like, I am going to freeze to death. I'm a human popsicle right now. And I'm just talking to myself, not to anyone else. And then I feel this. Raggy was the elder, and I said, yes. Yes, grandfather. Raggy, you didn't catch any fish today.
I thought, I knew that. You didn't have to tell me that.
And he said, Raggy, you know what that means? That means that you're going to go hungry tonight. That means that your family is going to go hungry tonight. That means that tomorrow your family will still be hungry, Raggy, until you catch fish. You have to provide for your family in this village. And he stepped back. And I started to cry because the realization of how hard life is in these villages came crushing in on me. They have to do it the old way, or they're not allowed to do it. That's what the law says. And there were people on the ice for survival. And I was crying because I remembered what it was like to be in a facility where we were forced to do every day, and if we didn't, they wouldn't feed us. And we went hungry. I remember as a young mother running from a violent, abusive situation with two little babies. Nowhere would I find safety unless I was far. And I ran with my children using my thumb. I worked hard. And we went hungry.
I remember that today in our communities that people go hungry day after day. Hungry for food, but hungry for love. Hungry for somebody to care about them. And I was crying. Reggie. I didn't want him to see my face. And I turned. I said, "Yes, Grandfather. Remember this. Our people are a people of community. We are people of community. And when Pastor Charlie and I go home tonight, we will say our prayers that you will go hungry and your family will go hungry and the wind will pick them up and carry them through this village. And someone will come and bring you food. That is how we survive here from the beginning of time today." And that night, I did get to eat fish. I still don't like it. I have appreciation for it. I have an appreciation for the people that struggle every day of no fault of their own. In a place where a loaf of bread costs $5.99. In a place where a 2-liter bottle of Pepsi costs $5.69. I know that because I'm addicted to Pepsi. I drank very little there. A place where, in some of the places, when the food is put out, it's small portions on plates, and what's left over they carry to the counter, and there is no trash can there, because the women in the kitchen will take that plate of food and they will separate it into the meat and to the veggies. They will cut it up real fine and put it in a big pot, and tomorrow you'll have soup. And you never question it, because that's your food. That's one village. So many more villages. I did not know until I walked with them. I did not know there's not a vet there. I love animals. I found out. I did not know there was not a funeral home there. I found out. Because there was a funeral, someone had died. And it became our responsibility as a community to take care of it with our own hands and with our own prayers. Found out that it was churches of all denominations coming together, Catholics and Lutheran and Methodist, to hold it all to be. They sat in a room and never argued about one thing. Their concern was to do the work of God and work among the people in the community. Oh, if we could only do that. I went to give, but I received more. I am so blessed, and so are you. Someone told me once, all you need to do is pray, and Jesus will take care of you. What I want to say, hurting people need Jesus in a human form. Jesus working through you so that your arms wrap around them. Let Jesus live in you every day and be the arms to wrap around hurting people and to feed those who are hungry. And so we'll end with this. On the outskirts of the forest, there was a circle. Every day at the certain time, the chief of the quails would come. She would sit upon a branch in the tree, and she would begin to sing. And as she sang, it called out to her tribe, "Come, come." They would land in the circle and they would begin to peck and scratch at the earth. They would eat the seeds and the bugs. And then they would begin to dance and sing with each other. And it was good. This happened day after day, year after year, and one day a hunter came. He had been lost, and he found this circle, and he stepped back as the quail began to sing, and they came. And he watched, for he was a wise hunter, and he watched, and he watched, and he learned her song. And when he knew the song and the tune well enough, he came back. But he came earlier in the day, and he began to sing, and the quail came. They scratched at the earth, they pecked for seeds and bugs, and then they began to sing and dance as one. And at the precise moment, from behind his back, he pulled out the net and said, "Whoosh!" and threw it on top of them. And immediately they began to struggle. Immediately they began to fight against one another. They were trying to save themselves. And the more they fought, the more they were caught. And the hunter said, threw some of the quail over his back and headed off. And I need not tell you what happened to them, for you know. He would come back every few days. He would do the same thing. One day, the chief of the quail, she saw how small the flock, the tribe was. She knew that something was wrong, so she stayed in that tree all night and all day, and she watched, and she saw the hunter and what he had done. And she knew that she must come up with a plan. And she, too, believed in the one and only and asked. And so that night, she gathered them up. She told them, "What you are doing is not working. Soon there will be none of us left. This is what you must do when he throws the net upon you. Do not fight. Do not struggle. Stand tall. Put your head through the net, and when I give the signal, stretch forth your wings and fly as one." The next day, he came and sang the song. The flock came. They began to scratch and peck, sing and dance, and whoop! He threw that net on them. And they remembered. They did not struggle. They did not fight. They stood tall with their heads out. And she gave the signal. And they stretched forth their wings. And they began to fly as one. And across the sky to the bramble bushes, they landed. The net. The brambles pulled the net in, tearing at it. And the quail went away to safety. This happened a few days, and the hunter gave up. For you see, as people, we are often busy
fighting against one another, trying to survive, trying to get people to see it our way, not their way, not looking. If we were like the quail, we stand beside each other, stand proud, and fly as one, we will survive. Our community will be so strong. For when I try to save myself, I am truly lost. There is only one God to save all of us, whatever name we choose to call. There are so many names. Embrace them. For God hears all prayers sent to him. And so I will say, Wanishi. Can you try it? Thank you. Wanishi. Wanishi for listening. Anyone want to go fishing this year? I'm available.